When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you can turn your pain and suffering into empathy for other people, you can save two lives, yours and theirs, right? I think that's like kind of, to me, that is the root level human condition.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We have a very special guest today, Zachary Bell. You may know him as a veteran with a sign. The end.
The end.
That's all I know, really.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate that.
I'm really good at
Really
good at interviewing.
You know what I appreciate about you? Can I hook on Dan for a little bit?
Sure, yeah.
A little bit? You really are who you are.
Yeah. I just don't have the energy to be anybody else, you know?
Well, you've got this empire, right?
Is that what this is?
You got Drinking Bros. You got multiple shows. Mm-hmm. Hard AF. If you're going to drink seltzer, drink Hard AF. Soft plug for that.
That's true, yeah. I mean, you don't want to... To me, it's all about efficiency because it's 8%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't have time to drink 4.5% booze.
Who has that kind of time?
Nobody that I know.
Thankfully, with Hard AF Seltzer, you get 8% alcohol by volume, and it's made in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's made by real people in a real town, and you're supporting a veteran-owned business?
Yeah.
Man, doesn't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't. We actually just switched brewers. We were in Murfreesboro, but now we're in downtown somewhere.
Murfreesboro, yeah.
I don't remember the name of the fucking brewer that we have now.
I think it's Bob's Brewery?
No, sorry. I think that might be a TV show.
Is that not Bob's?
Oh. So, before we get into the show and all the things, civic stuff that we talk about, let's talk about you a little bit. You were in the Marine Corps, right?
I was in the Marines.
And what made you decide to do that?
The marketing is definitely a big part of it.
It's better than any other. I don't know. The Air Force had some decent ones back in the day because they pretty much told you, you're not going to do shit.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, that's a pretty good marketing pitch for this generation.
When you live through the war, you're going to go home and lie to your parents about it.
Yeah.
Join the Air Force.
Yeah. Yeah. but the Marine Corps... is like, I think it speaks to a different kind, and on purpose, they do a good job with their marketing because they don't want pussies, right?
No, they were looking for me. They were looking for fatherless homes, you know, who needed some type of masculine figure in their life, who needed to feed in that superhero complex. And like, dude, I remember when the Dragon one came out.
Yeah.
The only bad part about that advert is that he ends up becoming the villain, aka an officer, at the end of it.
Yeah, I don't know why they made that decision.
Yeah, right? Which is kind of a bummer.
I don't think you need to really... Officers are going to join no matter what. I don't think they get compelled by advertising to join.
Yeah, we need congressmen.
Yeah. We need people to cheat the stock market. So...
Somebody born in Caracas? There it is. I'm done.
So what for real, you were in the infantry?
Yeah, I was in infantry. So like my
Were you 11 or 21, 11. 31?
Yeah, 0311. Army calls them 11 Bravos.
That's right, we do.
Yeah, and...
because we're better, obviously.
What's fascinating to me about the... let me talk about this for a second. About the Marine Corps to the Army, especially during that time. Mm. At its peak, I believe the... Marine Corps was 250,000. If you like rolled it all up, active and reserve.
But quite a bit smaller. Maybe
the army's a quarter the size. It was a million.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's when people are like, "What's the main difference?" I would say like the main difference, especially in the infantry, is like the stuff that I'm not gonna say something outlandish like infantry riflemen are like Army Rangers. That's not true. Mm-hmm. But like the general tasking for a regular line infantry unit, especially during that time, 2007 to 11, was completely is completely different than what it is for the Army, just because of the scale mm-hmm. and the mission, right? So a lot of the stuff that I had seen the Marine Corps doing was like pioneering forces, which is really what the Marine Corps is best at.
Right.
It's like we go in, we clear the way, the Army sustains, holds, and mm-hmm. builds, really. And so,
well, I was a paratrooper, so that whole first to fight thing doesn't mean shit to me.
It doesn't?
No.
Because oh, you're not, you guys fighting too? Yeah.
But, well, we're there before you, right?
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, not to get too political about it, but I really think that we shouldn't have a standing army at all. We should have, the Constitution only authorizes a Navy, actually, right? I don't know. People don't seem to know that. The Constitution authorizes the Navy to protect transportation and shipping. That's it.
And that's why the Marines were made, to protect correct. The transportation yeah. so
I think,
and shipping.
Yeah. I think that the Army should be the Marine Corps. I think all the people that – all the dudes that are in the Army should be Marines. We should be defending the homeland mm-hmm. and not doing all this expeditionary bullshit. And there should be more Mews in all over the fucking place. That would be a much more – efficient and reasonable deployment of our forces than what we're doing right now, frankly.
I can co-sign that. I mean, a Mew is a base.
Yeah.
It's a base with legs.
It's a floating base.
Yeah. I mean, I was on one. That was my first deployment.
Why the fuck? We're basically the only people that can do that in mass, right? So why the fuck would we not do that? It blows my mind.
I don't know. I mean, and just working with the Army doing like content and stuff, I've noticed some things of just like how big it is, but it's insane like how much... I don't want to say fluff, but it's the only word I can think about. There's a lot of different, like, this person does this one task, this one job, right? And it's just to scale throughout the entire branch. Suppose the Marine Corps is just like, you have, like, seven jobs.
Yeah. I mean, it's... yeah. There's something to be said for both sides, I guess. I mean, having subject matter experts is important, but also having polymaths in a dynamic environment, somebody that can know a lot of different shit and adjust.
Yeah.
I mean, as an infantryman... the things that we know are gunfights mm-hmm. and call for fire and then cutting grass and sweeping the company area, picking up trash, getting yelled at, doing push-ups. I mean, a lot of it doesn't really have anything to do with the goddamn job, but here we are. You know, I mean, I think if in garrison, I would say we probably spend maybe 15% of our time doing our job, training for our actual job, and the other 85% is nonsense.
I can agree with that. It was just, and it was just a weird time. I mean, I wanted to go for many reasons. My cousin served about 4 years to the day before me. He's 4 years older than me. Mm. He was in the second push for Fallujah. There's also Live Leak. That's a big thing. People don't really give that credit.
Ogrish. Yeah? Before, it was ogrish.com and then Live Leak,
But, like, that's where the war was. Mm. You know, people were worried about what kids see online now. I kind of miss the days where it wasn't all blurred. Like, you could go to, like, Live Leak, you got Live Leak stuff. You didn't see that on X or other places, but like, you know, just guys being like, are you down with this? You know, and then just launching a 203.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to do that. And I mean, the Army, I don't know, a lot of it was their uniforms at the time too. I didn't like the limestone thing.
Oh, the ACU, it was terrible. That's the gayest uniform of all time.
What I found unique about it is it didn't seem to match the color scheme of what one would call the desert.
Or anything.
Yeah. They were definitely, and I don't know, I just, Marines have been around, my uncle was in the Marines in the first Gulf War, and so I was just like, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to join the infantry. And
well, what made you decide infantry specifically? Because my understanding is that every Marine is a rifleman.
That's not true. That's not true at all.
You want to expand on that?
That was a marketing campaign they came up with in like the 70s or 80s. And the phrase every Marine a rifleman is low level stolen valor. It's like the gateway drug of stolen valor. Because if that's true, then you're saying that every person holds the same job, then they should have come to me and been like, Zach, we need you to fix this Osprey. We need you to go over this data or like work comps, whatever. No, it's not. That's not my job. From what I understand, the Marine Corps has more rifle training than the Army does. I don't know if that's true or not.
But it depends on the unit, but I would say, generally speaking,
we go every year.
Throughout the entire Marine Corps, that is absolutely true.
Yeah, so like We go every year. Mm. Like, that's a big thing. You have annual rifle qualifications, yeah. unless you have a waiver for a deployment or something like right. that. But for the most part, if you're going to go every year.
In an infantry unit, we definitely do at least once a year, if not multiple times a year. It depends on what's going on, because we do, yeah. Like, expert infantry. There's certain things you have to qualify for.
Yeah, the EIB
for.
And all that stuff. Yeah, I'm learning EIB, all this. Yeah,
you have to do. And then before deployment, obviously, you qualify every time. If you're going to a promotion board or mm-hmm. anything like that, you have to, right? Or if you're going up for Soldier of the Week, Soldier of the Year, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
There's a lot of organic ways that you end up qualifying in the infantry, but I don't think, like, if you talk to Tulsi Gabbard talks about this all the time. She's an officer, obviously, but yeah. but all the same, has made many deployments, and she talks about how infrequently she's fired a rifle throughout her career. It's like maybe once a year where she goes out onto the range. She does it recreationally now, right? Now that yeah. she's kind
now of... she's doing the tactical games. Her, yeah, yeah, her and yeah. V are doing the tactical games. It's yeah. crazy.
So she's doing it recreationally now, but as an officer in the... she's in the Guard, but even she was on AGR for a while, I think, and then she's been deployed multiple times.
Yeah,
even
she's
then,
been a few times. Mm.
Even then, she's
I think
not
she was
doing,
a medic when she was enlisted.
I don't remember. Yeah,
I'm 99% sure. Yeah. But also, like, what she's saying in that statement, she's like, I do my job. Mm. Which is fine. Everyone can have their job. Not everyone is going to be like out there hooking and jabbing, you know, setting up an L-shaped ambush. It is cool, but we all had the option to pick a job. And so that was a job I chose. I don't care what anybody did in the military. I think serving your country is great. It's incredible. It changed my life. It changes almost 99% of the people's lives that are mm-hmm. part of it. This is the number one thing that you can do to guarantee that you'll change the socioeconomic status of your generation, like your family. Mm. Like, nothing is as dependable as that. Jordan Peterson has sure. like a talk on it.
Well, I mean, the GI Bill and the veteran home loan is largely responsible for creating the middle class, yeah. right? In the middle part of the 1950s, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I don't care what people did either. Like, I don't, and I have friends who were in before the GWAT, and they got out, and they all, like, you can always tell they kind of demur when we start talking about stuff.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I didn't actually get to deploy. I'm like, well, you don't get to choose if you get to deploy. You just sign up for when the fuck you sign up. There does, however, seem to be an inverse relationship between how violent your service was and how likely you are to bring up being a veteran in a Twitter argument, right? Because it's always cooks and aircraft mechanics who are like, I'm a goddamn veteran. You can't talk to me like that.
Back in my day.
Yeah. It's like, dude, I mean, if you got pruny fingers during your service, then I don't want to fucking hear about it, dude.
Yeah, someone, I had a tweet many, many years ago. Someone told me that, I was talking about PTSD and how there's different levels of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to gatekeep it, but someone was like, you don't know what it's like being on a ship, hearing missiles get launched. Mm-hmm. And
what's all relative, right?
And I was like, yeah, I don't, but you don't know what it's like being on the ground, yeah, calling in airstrikes.
Yeah, getting blown, like, the fuck up, calling in danger close shit.
That's
yeah.
when they go danger close and there's nowhere to go. You go, all right, this is it.
That's the only time I think that I'm not kidding, because I'm pretty autistic. The only time I ever felt, yeah, shocking.
Yeah,
the only
you didn't time smell I, like it.
Well, I'm wearing a new deodorant. Yeah. The only time I ever felt truly afraid in my life, I think, was we were in a cop. And it's like a four-story, Jared was with me at the time. We're in like a four-story abandoned mall, and bombs just started. It was the IRAM, but where they filled propane tanks full of C4 and shit.
Yes.
Like 30 of them landed in our fucking compound.
For real?
Yeah, like blew up all the trucks. The building is just like swaying like this. And I'm like, oh my God, we're just gonna, if somebody's shooting me, I will go kill that piece of shit.
Yeah.
But if bombs are just dropping, it's like, all right, I guess I'm gonna fucking die. What am I gonna do? You know what I mean?
Dude, and everyone has like made up shit about it too. Like, when I was in Kandahar Airfield, I was with the 24th MU, actually, on my first tour in Garmzer, Afghanistan, but we were there at the big base, and they're like, you know, if you hear the whistle, you don't get blown up. Mm. And I was like, I don't know, have we confirmed that? Have we asked a guy who like survived and was like, I didn't hear the whistle?
Because, well, yeah, because if you survive,
you know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
That's sampling on the dependent variable. That's what that's called.
Yeah, so I was like, I need like Dan to be like, yeah, I got blown up. Darndest, I didn't hear a fucking whistle at all. That's what I want to hear. But anyways, we were out and we're doing a clear, and they started danger closing these arty rounds. They were dropping like a what is it, a linear sheath where it just drops like one after another.
Yeah.
And so like they were doing that on this like whole village, and like they just go danger close, and when you hear those rounds crack above you, and you just go, oh dude, that's it. If one of them, if one of them has a little more or a little less gunpowder in it, that's a wrap for the boy.
Because we had for the most part in the GWAT, blue on blue was relatively low. I mean, obviously Pat Tillman is an example of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as dropping ordnance and shit, we did a relatively good job. Gulf War One, not so much. Right, the Brits lit up a bunch of our Cav dudes.
For real? Accident.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't remember which GBU they dropped on them, but it was like they were out in the open and they thought they were Iraqi tanks or some shit like that, and just boom, boom.
They thought
boom,
people were Iraqi tanks.
Yeah. No, it was, they were in tanks, asshole.
Oh, okay. I'm being serious.
You should be able to tell the difference if, no matter
for sure
what Air Force you're in on Earth, if you can't tell the difference between a T-72 and a fucking M1 Abrams, then, I mean, because they don't even look the same.
No,
the
T-72
is rounded hull. It's completely different. But anyways.
Also, you should have been like doing it in simulations. Like they should have seen him. Yeah. Should have been like, oi, governor, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to concentrate when you haven't had your tea, I suppose.
Yeah, your mud water.
Playing that bullshit.
Yeah. Dude, how are they in charge of stuff ever?
The Brits? Yeah. Well, like, I mean, I think it was all, to be honest, I think they just did a really good job of puffing their chest up, to be honest, because they had a really good Navy.
Yeah.
They had the best Navy in the world for a while, right? Yeah. So I'll give them that. But a bunch of fucking retarded farmers.
Yeah.
In America, beat their ass.
Patriots.
It wasn't like there were some bloody battles and it got off to a slow start for us. But once we were fully engaged in the Revolutionary War, we beat the Christ out of them.
Yeah.
It's like
once Mel Gibson came over and showed us how to do counterinsurgency.
Yeah. RIP Heath Ledger, by the way. Thanks for your service.
Heath Ledger, dude, never forget.
He died there and in real life. Fucking sucks.
Pretty G'd up move though, melting down your kids' toys to make them into bullets for your enemies.
Man, I gotta tell you.
If you're gonna do a thing, like that's up there with Rambo, painting the explosive warheads.
As far as like that movie was always a little bit cringy, but that part of it kind of got my dick hard.
When he's melting them,
yeah,
and he's just talking his men, he's like, "We're gonna keep going."
Yeah. We always thought about doing a sketch at Black Rifle about that, because there's this story. Actually, it was pretty commonplace that every soldier, when they deployed, you got a pound of coffee and like a cast iron thing to cook it in, like basically like a skillet. So you would roast your own coffee and then grind it and make your coffee, right?
Yeah.
So we wanted to do a sketch around that. We just never got around to it for some reason, probably because we're making stuff about buttholes and dicks, you know, pissing people off for no reason.
Worked out.
Yeah, it seemed to work out.
Worked out.
We're getting way off track here, man.
No, dude, it's your show. I'm really excited to be here. This is a bucket list moment for me.
Oh, yeah, I can tell. Yeah, you were really glowing when I saw you outside. It may be the humidity, though.
That's the humidity in my pale, fair skin, but I'm really excited to be here.
Northern European whites, we just can't handle any kind of allergy at all. I'm
no
allergic
allergies.
To everything.
You know, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, so I'm, you know, grew up in the shadow of the Delta over there in the Mississippi mud water. You know, I always say that, like, I'm in a place in my life now where, like, I really like a good Wagyu steak, right? Or, like, really nice, finer things. I love an experience. I love taking my kids and my wife out to do something I never thought about. But deep down inside, all I really want is a fried bologna sandwich.
Like, yeah. You can't take the white trash out of you. It's difficult.
Give me some fried bologna, a cup of Tang, and let's go, bro.
Why do you think – I was talking to somebody about this, one of my buddies this morning. Why do you think – and I'm sure you – I don't have to ask you if you've experienced this, because I've talked to so many people in who are in gunfighting positions over the years.
Okay.
Why are there so many – well, so for the Army, the highest – GT score is infantry on average, right?
Yeah.
I think it's the same for the Marine Corps. We had, just in my platoon, the first platoon I was in, three master's degrees, and I was on the way to get one.
Yeah.
So four, or almost four. Comic book nerds, every kind of dork you can think of, signed up, not just to go to the infantry, but go to the 82nd Airborne and jump out of planes and shoot people in the face. Why? What do you think that correlation is? I've always wondered about that.
Easy. Star Wars, Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey. We're a whole generation of men that weren't really raised by fathers. Either they weren't there or they were absent. And it is my belief that we all were looking for like that great adventure. And young men especially yearn for it. We like want to do it. like all the Star Wars, Indiana Jones, all that stuff. It's about a guy's out there pushing his limits, living a life, you know, because at the end of the day, all you have is your memories and, you know, the stuff you did along the way. Like, nobody really cares about anything else. And like at that time, you know, I wanted to go on my great adventure. Like, I wanted to go do something I'd never done before, be in the Marine Corps, go in the infantry, go to Afghanistan twice and be a part of something bigger than myself. And, you know, like, my friends have went on to run businesses. One of them's like the head, or was the head of the Afghanistan Bureau for the New York Times. I mean, they've all gone to accomplish other things, multiple degrees. I've got a master's degree myself. You know, I think you just kind of unlock that great desire to want to do something different.
Yeah, I think there's some correlation between high intellect and wanting to accomplish something, right? So the vast majority of human beings in their life, every task they do will have to be repeated at least once, if not every day for the rest of their lives, right? I'm talking about most folks find themselves in some kind of menial job. And I don't mean that to be dismissive of their work or anything. I just mean they work in a blue collar way of some sort, or even if it's the new blue collar, which is tech, you're doing this repetitive shit over and over. It's very rare that somebody, that an ordinary person does something once and that's it, right? They accomplish something and then that moves the needle somehow.
Yeah.
I think people that are inclined to do that sort of stuff when it comes time for combat usually opt in to being close, as close to it as possible. Like having their Hemingway moment is the way we used to say that.
Yeah. He's always been a writer inspiration of mine. I know all his mental health stuff, blah, 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 blah. That's all I'm talking about. Maybe the idea of Hemingway is what I really aspire towards, you know.
So or Vonnegut, you know, I mean, he did the same thing.
Yeah, but like degree. Hemingway was such a bro for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of like, he made this up, blah, blah. I don't care. Just like, maybe I just like surface level Hemingway.
I mean, the story is what matters.
Yeah, the legend.
Yeah. So this show, the premise of the show is that you can bitch and moan about your rights and wait around for somebody to secure them for you, and you'll be a subject under their rule because they'll dictate the terms of your existence. Or you can secure your rights yourself by performing the responsibilities required of you, and that's what makes you a citizen. Literally, that's the literal definition, the Webster's definition of a citizen. I keep, like, there's a lot of discussion. There's a movie out called Civil War right now, but there's a lot of discussion about, you know, the silly stuff that's going on in the world these days, in our country especially, the erosion of liberty. I mean, we just, we're in the process right now of not just extending the warrantless wiretaps through FISA, through the Patriot Act, but expanding them, right?
Cool.
Like, we're in the process of expanding that right now. And everybody's like, well, when do you know it's time to act or whatever? And I think it's like, it reminds me a lot of the mistakes that the Libertarian Party makes all the time, which is to aim nationally for recognition instead of taking over lower level politics, right? Because it's a lot easier to convince people to vote for a city councilman that believes in, you know, absolute liberty than it is to convince the entire nation that somebody from this wingnut party should be president.
Yeah.
I think, right? I think people, they want the magic pill, they want the microwave, they want something that happens now. But the reality is that it's many, many small choices on a daily basis that build resilience against tyranny, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these are the conversations that I like to have.
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, what are we going to do? Who are we voting for president? I don't give a fuck about that, to be honest. Yeah. Obviously, it matters because we have a retard in office right now that just doesn't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But
he doesn't think so. So it's kind of cool for him.
He doesn't think.
It's kind of a good gig for him.
I mean, yeah, he's getting his diapers changed.
What?
He's getting his diapers changed for free. He's eating all the ice cream he can get.
Yeah.
Which is,
we will be judged the harshest through the lens of history. If they're like, you put your most elderly hardest job ever.
Yeah. There's
like,
a great, there's
I
a
hope,
great.
I hope, I mean, I'll be there like in a documentary being like, yeah, it was dumb. Yeah. Like, but we've got to really remove ourselves from this idea that age and intelligence are connected. At a certain point, it is diminished, to say the least.
Certainly, yeah. But I think one of the purposes of this show is just to refocus people on you're responsible for the shit that's going on around you.
Yeah.
We have completely abandoned that idea. Like, there's every major religion or philosophy has this parable about am I my brother's keeper? And the result is always the same. The answer is fucking yes, right?
Yeah.
It is always yes, no matter what faith or philosophy you happen to have or what culture you've been a part of. But we've completely abandoned that now. That's not even part of, you know, what we talk about. Even at the individual level, everything is somebody else's fault now.
Yeah.
What do you think? Like, you work mostly with veterans, right?
Yeah.
And we tend not to think that way, although there's a lot of people who do. Mm-hmm. A lot of people fall into that trap. But you're a husband and a father now. Like,
yes.
You can see the immediate impact. Once you send your kids to school, and it's not like it was when we were kids, where you're I walked to school and I was 6 years old, right? It's just not like that anymore.
No, it's not. Mine drive. Well, one of them does. Yeah.
Is it like a Barbie Corvette or what?
No, that's for me.
Oh,
you don't like Barbie?
Love Barbie.
Yeah. Barbenheimer. No. I read over some of the principles. I was refreshing my memory now. I really liked him a lot. Like one of the first ones that popped out to me and like I really, really love is the no matter where I am, leaders eat last.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's like a very, very old Marine Corps thing in particular that Simon Sinek took and stole military culture, and then he's the first guy to implement it into the business world.
Mm-hmm.
But like I think about that a lot, like in as a husband, as a father, and just as someone in general. Like I try to, I find the best version of myself in the service of others.
Sure, yeah. That's we're biologically programmed to do that. Otherwise, we'd never built civilization in the first place.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it reminds me a lot of my humanity. If I'm being like transparent about it.
What do you mean?
I don't know. There's a part of me that always worries, like if I too closely examine the things I did in war, that I will completely reject myself. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But I view that. But even as I say that, the lens through which I view that moment is viewed from a place of like I'm sitting here in Austin, so I've got comfortable life and nature to reflect on it. And then I'm trying to judge something that's humanity's failure, right?
Right.
War as a whole. And you just can't reconcile it. I don't think you ever will. It's not like it's negative, but like you have to like put it into a place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think one of the more difficult things to do in life, if you are well-adjusted and not a sociopath or captured by a victim mindset, is to show grace to yourself, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I guess the way to say that is you're your own worst critic. It's a pretty common phrase throughout, the 20th century. But I think learning to hold yourself accountable while still being reasonable about it is a difficult process.
Yeah.
But the thing that you should learn from that is how to extend that grace to other people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the real wisdom, I think, because life is fucked up. It's fucked up. I mean, I had a shitty childhood. Sounds like you may have as well.
Oh, yeah. And it still haunts me.
Yeah. But it's like, what do you do with that? One of my quotes that people like to remind me of is if you can turn your pain and suffering into empathy for other people, you can save two lives, yours and theirs, right? I think that's like kind of, to me, that is the root level human condition.
Damn.
This episode is brought to you by Ghostbed. Ghostbed.com/drinkerbros. Go there today and get 50% off site-wide. All their mattresses, all the sheets, everything. They've got the Ghost Bed Classic. They've got the Ghost Bed 3D Matrix. They've got the Ghost Bed Lux. And now they've got the new one, the Ghost Bed Flex Hybrid. All these are cooling mattresses. They're the best in the business. They also have the new technology that we've been looking for all this time. Well, not we, just Joel, which is the RV mattress. Now, if you've got one of these things, you know that you can't find a mattress that fits them appropriately, at least not a good one. And the ones that come with them are terrible. So if you're an RV person, you definitely want to jump on that. And by the way, they got the best pillows in the business. You've heard me say it before, but I travel with these things. That's how good they are. It's kind of a pain in the ass, but not as bad as sleeping on hotel pillows, I'll tell you that much. So go to ghostbed.com/drinkerbros today. Use the code drinkerbros at checkout. You're going to get 50% off all the mattresses. Check them out today. We've been with them for a while. I've got them all over my house. You know they're good. So my best advice here is go for the 3D Matrix. It's the most comfortable bed I've ever slept on in my life. Go get it today. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Use the code Drinking Bros. You're going to get 50% off. That's 50% off. You're not going to get a better deal. It's like you go through all the shit you go through in life, and essentially you're just transmitting wisdom to people, right? Wisdom through advice or graciousness or whatever, right? I mean, it's that's essentially what you're doing. You're taking what you learned and trying to help the next person do the right thing, or maybe avoid the suffering that you went through. Now, that's not always possible. Like, there's no amount of discussion about getting abused as a child that I can tell a child that's going to stop them from getting abused, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't have that power. So what I try to do is focus on things like these principles, especially that leadership one, because, you know, what is being asked of you as a human being, I think, is a good question to ask yourself. Because if you ask yourself that question and answer it correctly, you're basically going to develop a mission statement for your own life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, everything I do is going to be in support of this.
Yeah.
For me, it is that every meaningful thing you do in life will be in the service of other people. And I don't mean that, like, I'm not trying to be Jesus, or that that's just basic biology so far as I can tell, mm-hmm. right? Like, all the stimulus we have in our brain, all the chemical reactions that happen, oxytocin, all this stuff, are designed to make not just us, but our DNA into the future, and then the community more resilient, right? Like, yeah. We're biologically designed by whatever you believe in to behave that way. So recognizing that seems like a pretty important first step.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. You kind of fucked me up with what you said, though, in a good way. Like, it's tough. It's tough, especially when we don't have, like, good parents at all. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I think the hardest part is, like, you run out of references, like, really, really quickly, especially when you're trying to raise a family or even trying to grow up as a, you know, a man. And so, like, that's why I pulled myself towards movies and stuff, looking for heroes, because I didn't have any positive male role models for so long. And it takes time to put that together. But, like, you know, it's so hard, especially with the veteran military world. There's, like, so much, like, gatekeeping, or, like, of people, like, protecting their trauma or feeling judged or whatever based on, like, all these different things, when the reality of it is, like, we need to all, like, band together and become, like, a unified voice and stop being used as, like, as framework for some political ideology that really isn't just looking out for our best interests. I don't think the color of someone's tie dictates, like, who they are as a person or if they'll support my community. I look at what the actions are and what they've done. And, you know, it's tough. It's tough a lot of times, because especially veterans get locked into, like, this, you know, victim mentality, as everyone does. I mean, because it's hard, you know. But, like, how can I say this lightly? We're the only group where if you're messed up, it can actually get you some pretty cool shit.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, that used to be the case. Now it's the case for a lot of people, I think, more than before, because we've kind of tailored our culture to support the victim mentality. Yeah. But yeah, before, in the early 2000s, it was definitely the case, mid 2000s even, that, you know, that you would get that kind of response for sure. But, you know, as a parent,
you get, like, lit on the flights early. You get free drinks at bars. You get, like, you know, tickets to things, like doors open.
Yeah.
And then, like, that well dried up quickly, as you're saying.
Yeah, but that's like,
people bled it dry. They're like, well, you know, I spelled Iraq once.
Yeah. The Marine Corps does a good job, or did, not anymore, really, but they did. They used to do a good job of not coddling people, right?
Not during, like, my time.
It was intentional. The attitude was intentional as well. It's like, hey, we've got hand-me-down fucking weapons, dude. Yeah. So we just got to go fight. That's how it is. And if you map that on, and you know this as a parent, obviously, if you map that idea onto children, let's say you have two kids, they both fall down, skin their knee. One of them you run over to and ask if they're okay. The other one you tell them to get up and walk it off. Which kid is going to do better in life? I think it's pretty obvious which kid is going to do better in life, right? So, you know, we're all susceptible to this to some degree or another, which that makes it all the more important that as a community, we we treat that situation the way that it's meant to be treated, as an opportunity to become more resilient and not as an opportunity to fucking coddle somebody for whatever reason. Like, it just doesn't, there's no practical benefit to coddling anybody ever.
Yeah, we need to be much more like teach people how to fish mentality in general. You know, like, it's just hard though. I don't, I think it really just comes down to people not being brave enough, honestly. And this is coming from someone who wasn't brave enough and like taking that step forward and being like, I'm fucked up, man. Like, things aren't good. I've got to get some stuff together. You know, I made changes in my life to try and like work towards healing, which is hard. And people don't understand that. Like, it's hard to like dig that stuff out. But it takes a commitment. But
yeah, well, you know, I have this conversation a lot because infantry and special operators, the thing that separates them from the rest of those in service, whether it be military, first responder, is that, well, there's two things actually. One is that most of them, like 70%, come from some form of broken home. Uh-huh. And the second is that they burn cortisol at a much more efficient rate than their counterparts. And it's because you go through a lot of stress as a young person, you learn how to burn cortisol better, right? Nice. I think that is when we do these veteran suicide panels, I always try to bring it up because for people that are in their 30s or late 20s or 30s or whatever, or maybe mid 40s if they stayed in there and for a full career, that are in these jobs, the vast majority of them aren't just unpacking what's happened over the last 5, 10, 20 years, but their entire lifetime, right? Because it's compounding. It's like, at a fucked up childhood, I found relief by going to do the craziest job on the fucking planet that stressed me out for 20 years. And now all of a sudden I'm just sitting here in my lawnmower trying to figure out what's going on in life. We don't do very much in the way of addressing the compounded stress over the course of a lifetime. Like, we talk about, because there's this trope of the veteran, his buddy gets shot and dies in his arms, and that's where you get PTSD. That's very rare, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just not, that's not a common thing. Getting blown up is pretty common. Seeing people die is definitely pretty common. But I think the prolonged exposure to extreme stress is really what fucks people's brains up, because you don't know how to get back to normal, to being a normal person again, right? That's the difficult part. So the point of all that was, for you, considering your background, what did it mean to heal, I guess?
Just a lot of work, counseling. I did EMDR. I didn't like it. I know people like it. I did that. At one point I worked at a nonprofit and I was like an outreach specialist, and my job during that time was to like work with other organizations, and like I would audit their services. So I did like a ton of stuff, like hyperbaric oxygen therapy. I did sound therapy, magnet therapy, like all sorts of crazy stuff. And like the mindset I had going into it is like, if I get like 5% better, that's cool. Or like 10% better, that's cool. And then eventually it'll add up. But I mean, for me in particular, it was after I started Veteran with a Sign, actually in 2020, about a year after that, you know, I got connected with JT and he had told me about the vets retreat. And he's like, do you want to go? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to go. And he called me like September 1 and like October 1st, I was down there. And so that was like the biggest catalyst for my healing.
What do you think the difference was from before and after? Like, what, practically, I guess.
With what?
With your personality. I mean, because that's what we're talking about. It is.
Oh, my personality, like after the treatment?
Yeah.
I'm a lot more, I don't know, I cry. That's probably the best, like off the top rip. Like, I, you know, like when I'm around my daughters and my wife, like I'm more open to like love and connection than ever. I'm more empathic, like to a fault, and I'm more aware, and I'm more calm actually, and like I don't know, it's just like opened up a whole different part of my brain.
I think being empathic is a really important part of that, because here's how I see it as far as the let's call it an archetype for trauma for a military person. It is a combination of a hardware and software issue. The hardware issue being traumatic brain injury, chemical exposure, whatever, that fuck up your hormones, your limbic system, so on, right?
Yep.
That's the hardware side. The software side is typically behavioral changes that lead to poor sleep, poor attitude, and a lack of purpose, right? So those two things in confluence create, in my opinion, and I've done quite a bit of research on this, that creates the archetype of the modern post-traumatic stress veteran.
Is that like the operator syndrome thing?
Operator syndrome is, I mean, more or less the hardware side, mm-hmm. And they consider the other parts to be downstream of the hardware, and I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think they're equal. I think they're on equal footing. But either way, being empathetic about it, and it's why I use that quote a lot, turns you into a real person again. It is a very dangerous situation to take someone who doesn't fear death anymore and take their purpose away, right? Because to them, they're just looking at a clock waiting for the time to run out. So if it gets boring or irritating or fucking too hard, they're just going to blow their fucking brains out, right?
Yeah.
That's a very dangerous situation. But somebody that can look at a person and feel their joy or feel their sadness, I think that's how you become a real person again, right? I don't think you and I are going to go back to a point where we're afraid of death again. Maybe to some degree where you don't want to die because you don't leave your kids or wife, right? But it's not about you. It's about letting people down. So I think that's the full circle part of it. I think that to return that person, that archetype, back to a normal, functional human being, they have to have hope and fear again. Hope that for whatever is going to happen in the future, and fear of letting down the people that matter to them. I think that's the push-pull, right, in life. So that empathetic part is probably the most important part of it, because that's the hardest thing for us to do. Because we're taught the complete opposite. Like, my buddy gets shot in front of me, I just got to step over his dead body and keep fighting, right? That's not empathy.
It was a real problem. I mean, like, and I would also notice, like, I would do things to like put additional stress on like normal tasks that aren't really that hard, but to force myself to find some level of excitement from it to complete it. And like, I was kind of a dullard in the sense of how I was relating to other people, and like the feelings of others were just not something I'd ever really cared about. And I'm not perfect by any means, but like my father was never like, "Man, I was kind of an asshole today." Like, that was never a thought he had, or my mother.
Sure.
And like, they'll both go into their graves without those thoughts. And like, just the fact that I'm like, was I nice to my, did I give her a hug? Did I say this? I say that? Like, I don't want to give myself too much props, but just like going down that road alone, like there's a lot of stuff that I know that I've broken, but like, I'm always trying to be better in general. Cause like, I hate, you know that meme that goes around where it's like Halloween spirit, and like it's like the outfit of like whatever stereotype it is.
Yeah,
I hate that the idea of a veteran's like so predictable. That it's an outfit. Yeah. I hate that, and so like I'm constantly trying to like break that in my own way. Granted, I know I've made like a whole internet persona, but it's fake. It's not real. That's not who I am. That's like saying that, you know, everyone in the TV, the magic box is really living in my TV. That's not really.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we focus, it's kind of, I don't know, sometimes incomprehensible, certainly not what you would, how you would think this would work. But typically speaking, when you're going through shit, it doesn't really help to focus on yourself that much, right?
No.
Like, you, generally speaking, it helps a lot to focus on other people, because I find this to be true. If you can learn to understand and forgive other people, then you can learn to understand and forgive yourself. It's very true that there's a fine line between doing what's right and just merely trying to survive sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, life is fucked up, so I put yourself in the shoes of somebody who's doing something that you find abhorrent. Like, what would I do in that situation? Because people like to talk tough, like, "Oh, if the Nazis were to take over my city, I would have done something." Like, no, you wouldn't have. You wouldn't have done shit.
Yeah.
Like, just like everybody else. And if you did, you would have been killed like everybody else.
Everyone does do that a lot. The Monday morning quarterbacking of every scenario.
Yeah. But I think it's a good idea to Monday morning quarterback stuff, but do it from a perspective of trying to understand why the person did what they did and not trying to say that I would do better, because how do you know you haven't been in that situation? So like, you know,
have we lost all nuance, Dan?
That's what you're making sure. Me think. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know that the mob has the intellectual capacity to hold that in their minds all the time and still do the day-to-day functional shit that they need to do. That's why...
When you say the mob, what do you mean?
Just ordinary people.
Oh,
right?
Civilians?
Not even just civilians. I mean...
I'm not talking about military people.
Apolitical people or whatever, right?
I call normal people just like regular people who don't do internet stuff, civilians and stuff. That's just my new perspective.
On I just think like there... I don't agree with the way it was done, obviously, but there's a reason that it worked more or less to keep populations sedated, if you want to call it that, or at least calm and productive. Like the church kept people illiterate until the middle part of the 16th century, basically, until the King James Version of the Bible was translated in 1511.
Yep.
The Bible was only in either Greek, the Septuagint, New Testament, or Latin, or Aramaic, or some shit like that. Nothing that a fucking farmer would ever be able to read.
Yes.
If they could read at all. And it wasn't until 1511 that ordinary people ever had the chance to actually read what was in the Bible, which was, you know, I'm not even religious, but I'm just saying that was the main source of identity back then.
It's still that way in Afghanistan. Nobody certainly can read, and that's why they're always radicalized.
It's a very trust me, bro situation, which is never great.
No. The but mom's like, bruh, it hella says you got to blow up those infidels. Yeah. Like,
yeah, but it's the, you know, we call this our epistemology, right? It's the set of facts and beliefs based on those facts that we all agree upon in a culture. And we just don't, it's not that we don't have nuance anymore. We don't have an epistemology anymore. There's no 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like, well, maybe 1 is 5, right? So who knows, which is nonsense. It's, you know, you can blame whatever you want to. You can blame cultural Marxism and shit. And it's definitely to blame. But I also think that a lack of personal responsibility, plus the fact that people weren't designed to have to hold all of human intelligence in their heads 24 hours a day to be able to make complex decisions like that. That's why we have experts in things like philosophy and shit. Yeah. Right? The problem is that whenever you build these institutions, they invariably become corrupted by assholes who are just looking for money and power.
Yeah.
So the trick in life, one that we just haven't been able to figure out in mass yet, we figured out at lower levels, but in mass, is that how do we build institutions that benefit the mass without letting those institutions become the tail wagging the dog, right? I think it's a really important question that we need to start asking ourselves, and something that we, as you know, leaders and communities, definitely have a responsibility to figure out, instead of just bitching like, oh, it's only going to get worse. Fucking sucks, man. Like America, man, maybe we need to fucking secede from the war, whatever the fuck people say all the time. And I'm guilty of it too. I say stupid shit all the time. But that that fatalistic attitude, that called black pill attitude, whatever you want to call it, is pussy bullshit. It's opting out. That's what it is, right?
It's like opting out of responsibility.
Correct, yes.
Everyone wants to opt out of responsibility.
Yes.
I think that's what you're trying to get.
Ultimately, that is the case. So that's why I do this show. It's like, I think with a little bit of information in historical context, people can see the importance of just doing mechanically the right things every day.
Yeah.
Right? Like, admit when you're wrong. Try to do the right thing. Admit when you're wrong. Be there when people need you. Be honest about things. Shit like that is important. Because we're all just kind of like fucking, especially with social media, we are building a fucking archetype of who we think we are, and then putting that out to the world, and then that's not at all who we are. I'm lucky to be a fucking lunatic, and I'm just the same dumbass all the time.
No, I've seen your tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty on aggressive. Brand.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I'm all over the place. I'm in the HOV lane someday. I'm just doing my own thing. No, I get it. Well, and I think you're talking about a lot of different things. One thing you touched on, like the archetype of like the way we use the internet, I liken it, I hope that's the right word, to like early television, like, and I always feel that people can tell the difference of when I'm being like veteran with a sign or when I'm trying to be Zach, if that makes sense. But now I know that that's just not the case. I think everyone takes everything way too much as like, this is pure information. This is not just entertainment sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Which is like, I mean, the other day I And then I'm fascinated by the things that people interact with or engage with, which is the lowest, oftentimes the lowest common denominator or the least amount of effort involved. Mm. Like, and that's these are always things I'm running from, but you know, like my biggest issue with the veteran community is veterans. The end. And I worked at a nonprofit for many years, and the amount of things people told me is just outrageous. And like, I just developed this motto, like, listen, unless you're going to talk about a new problem, which there's always new problems, I don't want to hear you say like, oh, the VA sucks.
Yeah.
You got a way to fix it? No, yeah. I don't, but the VA sucks. I don't want to hear your fucking thoughts. And like, cause you're just filler. You're just, you know, you're like banter on local morning news. Oh wow. Traffic stuff. What do you think? Like that's, it's just nothing. Like,
what's that saying? You're either part of the problem, the solution, or the, fuck, what was the other one? Part of the problem, part of the solution, or part of the scenery.
Yeah.
Right? You're just kind of standing in the way.
Damn, dude, I didn't take enough nootropics here to, like, go round for round with you.
That's all right. I just remember things. If you're telling people you're a veteran, by the way, and I'm saying this for the audience especially and myself, if you're telling people that you're a veteran, you are trading on the honor of everybody that's worn that flag on their shoulder. I think that's, like, whatever that means to you, and it should mean something, then behave accordingly. Treat, you know, that I talked about mission statement earlier. I these platitudes like I support the troops, that doesn't mean shit.
You don't support the troops?
No.
Hey man, I think we got to wrap this up.
it's a meaningless platitude.
No, well, no, it's a thing. It's everyone likes to wrap themselves in the sovereignty of doing the right thing. You know, putting the yellow ribbon around the old oak tree, X amount of dollars go back to support stuff. That's fine. Mm. That's fine. You know, but like, what are you really doing? What are you really doing to be a part of this community? How are you helping? And like, I always say, like, if you're all you're gonna do is talk about the problem, then you're no help. We need to start thinking about solutions. And so, like, when I started Veteran with the Sign, all of that was like, I'm just gonna dismantle this idea of like the veteran military culture, and then like slowly I'll squeak in like mental health stuff or resources or companies or things that I think are like good for the community that can help the community and like don't hurt it and grift and take from it, then like we're gonna talk about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like that's the things that I'm trying to do like day in and day out. And I've expanded on that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's so you can think of it this way from a high level perspective. Whatever you're doing day to day, your work and family life and whatever causes or whatever you're involved in, all of those mechanical tasks are basically just a delivery system for the belief structure that you have, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, a fucking like Mexican food. It's the same five ingredients in every dish.
It's delicious. But
you can make a bunch of different shit with it, right?
Yeah.
They're all it's just a delivery system for the ingredients. I think that
queso delivery system. That's what Mexican food is.
I think that is a good way to think about it, because we don't think about the menial task that much. You know what I mean? It's like we don't think about breathing, but probably should keep doing it, I would say.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you map
trust
that.
Trust the science.
Yeah. You map that onto ordinary life. Maybe to you, the way you behave from in the walk from your car into the grocery store front door is monotonous, meaningless, doesn't affect your day that much. Maybe waving to somebody or holding the door for them means something to them, right? And I'm not saying you shouldn't lose your mind trying to do stuff all the time. It should be organic to some degree. But I do think being intentional about certain things is really important. One of the principles is I'll do something every day to help my country, my countrymen, or all men. And I think that should be your goal, right? Because you're exercising what is probably the most important muscle for you and for society. And that is the impulse to serve other people, right? So if you just find one opportunity a day to do something for somebody else, and it becomes a habit. You know, you stop thinking about it, and it's just like, oh, when somebody needs help putting their bags up in an airplane, I just do it. That's not something You know what I mean? Like, I
but
imagine.
But it's rare, though. That's the problem.
Sure.
That's the problem today. Is
it's rare. It's rare because we don't think that it's important to be intentional about it, frankly. I think it was Andrew Jackson that said, one man with courage makes a majority, right?
Yeah.
Like,
Tennessean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what that leaders eat last phrase means, right? It's like, you're wherever you are, you're responsible for everybody around you. If you're a fucking leader, if you can process that information and have the capacity to understand why it's important, then you're a leader by default.
Do you think that people reject individual responsibility because they're scared?
Scared of what? I mean, sure.
Probably. I don't know. I think they're scared of it. I think like most people in general are scared to really color outside the lines of like whatever normal society believes.
That's probably true.
Or does or thinks or any of it.
I mean, I think it's getting.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good. I got the same shit going on. I think. Yeah, there's something to that for sure. People used to eschew attention. It was rare. There's a trope for it, the class clown, right? Everybody else would shut the fuck up and mind their business, and there was one asshole in the class that would be doing dumb shit all the time.
Yeah.
Now we've got a class full of people doing dumb shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's so, when teachers are making TikToks now.
Yeah.
Which is insane and a massive violation of children's privacy. The amount of teachers that are like filming it's themselves weird. In schools and like no one seems to care.
It's weird. Yeah, I would never send my kids to a public school. Should I have some? I mean, it just seems like a horrible idea.
Yeah, it all depends on where you are. I mean, we're in a very good place in Tennessee, so I like it there. But if I walk in a room and I were to, I'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Give me your phone.
Yeah.
This is social studies. I don't need you filming yourself while you're talking to my child.
I think fear plays a big role in it. I think it's changing. I think the fear now is the fear used to be, I don't want to stand out. I don't want to be a spotlight. And that's true. Like, you know, basic training's like that. Nobody wants to stand out.
Don't spotlight yourself. Yeah. Don't spotlight yourself.
And that's a good idea, right? Because it teaches people to be more observant, right? Yeah. The less you act out, the more you observe, and the wiser you'll become. And when you do act, the better your actions will be. I like to say this. If you don't learn how to listen, no one can ever really speak to you, right? They're just throwing fucking post-its at your face, and they're landing. You pull them off and just throw it on the ground. That's pretty much your level of communication. So people are afraid. I think the fear has changed now. I think the fear is that I won't be accepted for stuff now. And that's what, to some degree, has precipitated this victim mentality. Like, well, you have to accept what I'm saying because I'm saying it and I'm allowed to say it. Like, yeah, you're allowed to say whatever you want. I don't have to accept any of it.
Yeah. Right?
Like, we both have autonomy here. But that's what happens. That's why it's so important who our heroes are in culture. Because it's the ultimate base form of aspirational marketing. Heroes are that they create the archetype that we as ordinary people want to become, right? John Wayne or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
It's
Doc Holliday.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a real guy. That's how it works, right? So when your culture makes heroes of people like, Siddhartha Gautama, like the Buddha, who eschewed his royal palaces and gave away all of his shit and just talked about becoming peaceful within yourself, or it's Jesus who talked about fuck these people who are trying to turn Judaism into something evil, just be a good person, no matter who the fucking recipient is, whether it's a tax collector or a prostitute, be a good man to that person.
Just be a good person.
Yeah. When those are your heroes, then people seem to emulate those characteristics, whether they recognize it or not. But when your heroes are people who I don't know, let's say have a selfie stick, right? Who are looking more at themselves and thinking more about themselves than other people, then that's who we become as a culture, and we all become miserable for it because we don't have the human interaction anymore. We don't have anyone taking care of us anymore. And worse, we're not taking care of anybody anymore, right?
Yeah, and like, I don't know. I think we really undervalue how powerful of a drug attention is. Mm. Because everyone sees the things that I do, everyone that sees the things that I do in you and everyone here, I've noticed there's a really strong desire, I don't know if it's innately in people or just something I've noticed, is that people really, really want attention for whatever reasons, and I don't think they're really prepared for what they're asking for. Mm. Because it's a light, right? It's a spotlight, and it shines on you, but it doesn't make everything better. It doesn't wash away your sins or all the bad things you've done or make your personality better. It just shows everything, the good, the bad, the light, the dark, the shadow, whatever you want.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And I don't know, I've been, and this is a whole thing I'm looking into lately. Like, I'm fascinated by the IRL streamers. Have you seen this? You know what I'm talking about? Like, kids like iShowSpeed or like Sneeko or like all these dudes who, like, wherever they go, they're just streaming constantly.
Yeah.
And it's just like their whole day. And I don't know. I just think it's like the ultimate worst thing to happen to the internet so far.
To the public as well.
Well, they're public and they're like, what's up? And they're just like if I was doing it, I would be streaming myself as we're having this conversation. Mm. It's like the ultimate meta storytelling or something. So I don't know. I'm just, because I'm always worried about like what's the new things coming and how it's going to affect people. I just don't get it. Does that make sense?
Think about it. There's a practical. Because
a selfie stick made me think about
it. Yeah. There's a practical way to think about this. Imagine you're in some kind of dispute with your spouse or a friend or something like that, and it's just the two of you versus if there's a third party in the room and how it changes the dynamic between you. Like, you're posturing now. You're doing things that you wouldn't like normally do, right? Sure, yeah. It's a lot of stuff is meant to happen at a very low level and in private. And I think that's the true genius of the founders of the United States, to be honest, is recognizing that and applying it to government. Like, the idea of federalism is there's a very limited amount of stuff that the federal government is allowed to do, not instructed to do, but even allowed to do, right? Like, you're not allowed to do anything else. This is how it's supposed to work.
Good.
not how it works, but it's how it's supposed to work.
It's how it's supposed to work, yeah.
There's a limited amount of stuff that you're allowed to do, but everything is done functionally better and more efficiently at the lowest possible level, right? That is the true wisdom of the United States Constitution. And it also happens to be true in almost every other facet of life, right? I think these things there's a lot of dynamic shit in life, but I think there are some underlying rules that apply to pretty much everything, and that's one of them. It's like think about it. The earliest and lowest possible level you can interdict any situation, the better it's going to be.
Yeah.
Right? Less effort to do it. If it's a violent situation, you're applying less violence to stop it at the lowest possible level and mitigating things like unnecessary casualties and shit like that. I mean, it's easy to think about it in war terms, but think about it in a classroom, corporal punishment. One dumb kid is doing something, you fuck the whole class over all of a sudden, and that's not like everything about that is negative.
Yeah.
Now this kid who probably just needed some attention is a pariah to his people, and then that fucking becomes his identity as he goes on.
Yeah.
It's like nothing good comes of this stuff. And I think that is the true wisdom of the founders of America. And it's why we should take a closer look at the underlying ideology, not just the letter of the law sometimes. Like why did they say what they said? It's maybe more important than what they actually said.
Do you think they were smarter than us?
Yes.
Why and how?
They were smarter than us because they only had to worry about those things, right? Like they don't have to worry about pop culture or what's going on here and there. It's a bandwidth issue, frankly. And it's smarter at what, I think, right, is a good way to frame that. But
I mean, just the foresight of being like, hey, we got to have federal rights and state rights. We can't, you know, like.
Well, they had the benefit of living under feudalist tyranny, right?
Yeah. So they have real time examples. Yeah. Like, yeah, this happened. That's, I get all of that.
But we don't have like Ben Franklin was a polymath. He was an inventor. He's a scientist. He was a statesman. We don't really have extraordinary people like that in government anymore. It just doesn't happen.
They make more money not in government.
Right.
And there's more freedom if you're going to, like, honestly.
Well, I think the people that join government that are like that, like Thomas Massey, for example, is, I know he's a Kentuckian, which isn't, you're a Tennessean.
Yeah.
He's a libertarian. He's
okay. I like him already.
He also happens to have a fucking engineering degree from MIT. Right.
Whoa.
He's one of the smartest people in the country, frankly, when it comes to that sort of stuff. And he chooses to stay in Congress. But most people who go there who are extraordinary leave immediately. Right. Like Justin Amish, who another libertarian guy, served a couple of terms in Congress. He was like, fuck this. This is bullshit.
It's
now,
a machine.
Now he's running for Senate again, which is nice. But yeah, I think the leadership roles in this country have been tailored in such a way that they only appeal to people who want money and power. And I don't think people who are interested in the dynamics of life are easily swept away by money and power.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben Franklin certainly wasn't motivated by money or power. He was just banging old French ladies, yeah, right, as ambassador to France and shit like that. But
George, I got to go back. I got to go ambassador again. Yeah.
These guys.
Well, we need more of that, though, right? Yeah. We need people who aren't motivated by what they can gain from a system, right?
Like the first
good example is Brandon.
Herrera, yeah.
Yeah, he's running.
He has nothing to gain.
His life has only become more complicated. Yeah. You know, he's a very good friend of mine, of yours as well. Mm. And, like, you know, if there's. I think, though, I've told him this several times. I was like, when he does win, I believe he will win. They will for sure make rules about how you cannot use your social media platform. I mean, Trump, they said, everyone's like, well, Trump did it. And it's not the same thing. Like, he doesn't have that type of fervent fan base. Well, he does, but like, they're going to make something. They're like, hey, if you have this many people you can reach on your own, you're not going to be able to do it anymore.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised about that. But yeah, it's, to the point about sacrifice, I guess is what we're talking about. Other than John Adams and his son, John Quincy, the first five presidents all left office in extreme debt. Like I think Thomas Jefferson's debt relative to inflation would be like $16 million when he died, something like that.
How did that happen?
He spent all, well, I mean, it happened to George Washington as well. He spent all of his money building the Continental Army. Like the first Continental Army that marched to Boston to fight the British, that was just George Washington's people from Virginia.
That was just his bankroll.
Right? Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, because, I mean, how would you convince the people of Boston to pay taxes when, by the way, the tax rate was 2.5%. That's what we went to war over. And now it's 40, effective 60, but it's 40 on paper. Just saying. Maybe we should...
I hear what you're saying. I don't want this episode to get taken down. I hear what you're saying, brother. It's time to stand up.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, it's...
They've taken enough for our security.
Yeah.
And I protect liberty.
You know,
like that one, too. I like the liberty over security one. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, he had some good ones. Old Ben, the old pervert.
Was he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was banging like half the French court. The old ladies in the French court, but what you gotta do, man? you gotta do something while you're over there. You can't yeah. You can't diplomat all day.
Yeah.
Sometimes you gotta dip your wick. But he also
they're
said,
not gonna make that documentary for you. No, are they? No, it's no, just him. No. Just him in there.
You're just slamming ass. Yeah.
Not like the John Abbs one.
Well, they kind of alluded to it because he's in a bathtub with that old lady one time. But it was way that was his thing.
Old French ladies.
Well, he was old, right?
Older French ladies.
He made a comment sometime. Bob can tell you about it actually in there. I can't remember exactly what he said, but one of his comments was effectively, you can't tell if she's young or old when the lights are out. Whew. When you're inside her. Something to that effect. But he also said, a republic, if you can keep it, right? Which implies that it is work, constant work. And Thomas Jefferson said that as well. It's written on my goddamn arm.
Yeah.
The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots.
Yeah, that's why I have a tree on my arm.
Yeah. It's like,
Tree Brothers.
We this was from the very beginning. We were instructed exactly how to maintain this, right? Through good times and bad, they gave us all the information we needed to make this happen in the right way, and we still fucked it up. So yeah, they were smarter than us, 100%.
Well, yeah, I mean, they definitely weren't distracted by the bread and the stuff.
OnlyFans, yeah.
OnlyFans.
Or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it is.
OnlyFans is modern day pimping. Yeah. I don't know why people see it as anything other than that. It's a bizarre service that offers you protection. It'll guarantee you money. You give them an exchange of goods, the oldest transaction known to man. And then but we're like, oh, it's cute. It's got a nice little logo. Like, it's weird. And it's the pure destruction of morality as a whole. And I don't understand things now. Like, I feel like I'm just on this path where I'm like Ron Swanson. In Parks and Rec, not what's his name, like actual Ron Swanson.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, you know, give me liberty or give me death. That's all I think about, you know, because they keep making these weird little changes and stuff where, like, it seems whenever someone tells me they're doing something for, like, my own good or, like, my protection or, like, you should trust us, that's when I immediately go,
I mean, it's like,
miss me with that. Like,
it's like a used car. Place being called Honest Dan Jewish Cars. Like, honest people don't have to put that before their name.
It's
typically.
Weird, yeah.
It's expositional dialogue and you're trying to fool people into something.
Yeah, and maybe it's just a thing where, like, you get older and you're like, I don't trust the government, but, like, I have the least amount of trust of any one thing is the government.
Mm.
Especially because, like, most jobs you can't be fired from in the government. That's crazy.
It's difficult. Yeah, I don't want to fucking wax on too much about this, but when I worked for the federal government, my boss told me this. Congress will pass a bill or a committee will pass some kind of measure that says we need to accomplish X in the next year or two, right? In the next congressional cycle, we need to accomplish X, whatever X is. And then OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, will review it and say, okay, well, you need four people to accomplish X, right? So we're going to hire four people. You hire four people, two of them are fucking retards, right? But after 1 year of service, which is outside of that window, outside of that 2 year, or inside, I guess, of that 2 year window, it's very notoriously difficult to fire a federal employee after that 1 year period. So the measure or whatever it happens to be comes back up for review 2 years later. And they're like, well, this job isn't getting done. OPM says, well, I guess it turns out we need six people to do that. So they hire two more people. And then one of them is a retard. So the work still isn't getting done. We have six people doing the job of two.
I love it.
And that's how the federal government works.
And that's how taxes work. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. I try not to be like too like paranoid or weird or come across as this like red pilly, but like, there's just a certain amount of things I don't understand that the government has involvement in. Like, legitimately, I don't know why I had to get a marriage license at all, which consisted of me and my wife going to a random stranger and being like, we'd like to get married. And they're like, okay, you kids in love? And then, like, they gave us a piece of paper, money went somewhere, and then we did that.
I mean, I understand.
Like, I don't understand what that – I don't need licensing. I don't need them to do that. I need them to work on roads and bridges. Yeah. That's what I need them to do. I need them to focus on, like, those things, and I'll focus on the other stuff. Like, I don't know why the government's involved in that aspect of my life in general.
Yeah. I can understand a legal document, right? Like a contract between you and your spouse.
Yeah.
Because there will be property, children, whatever – that you have to deal with in a legal sense.
Yeah.
But the government has no What's the government have to do with it?
That's what I'm saying.
Like an arbiter should be able to fucking draw that contract. I don't fucking consult the government when I do business contracts with people. So why the fuck would I consult the government about who I'm going to put dump loads into for the next like?
Okay. However yeah. Years.
Yeah. I couldn't.
I've always known you as a romantic, Dan.
I couldn't end it in a normal way.
It just doesn't like the things that they're involved in. Even like the different levels of healthcare. Like as someone I've worked in healthcare, for profit, nonprofit healthcare. I don't understand. I do understand why they are involved. I don't understand why they are involved. Does that make sense? Like,
because
it's like all attached to federal funding and different things like that. But like in general, I just think they should just stick to roads and bridges.
Sure, yeah.
Just stick to that stuff.
Roads, bridges. Although I don't even think they should do that. I think people ask like, well, if the federal government didn't exist, how would interstate highways get taken care of? The same way they get taken care of now by contractors.
Well, they're taken care of federal. Aren't they states?
Oftentimes, yeah, the state will get federal funding, take a skim off of that, right, obviously, and then pay a contractor down. But it's always – the work is always done by a private company somewhere. It isn't – you don't – like – unless it's maintenance, DPS or DPWs rather do maintenance and shit like that. But the companies that come out and build the roads, that's a private company doing that. There's no reason that we can't handle that ourselves. I'm pretty sure that we can fucking handle that ourselves just to hire a company to come do some shit. Hey, we need to build a new road here. It's going to cost us fucking $10 million.
Yeah.
There's 10 million people in this fucking area or whatever the fuck. So everybody, we need a dollar to build this road that you're all going to use. And if you don't fucking pay a dollar in, you don't get to use the road.
Deal.
The end, right? I mean, it's not that complicated. So Spike Cohen's a good person. He's been on the show before to listen to about this stuff because he kind of sardonically, sarcastically says, well, if it wasn't for the government, who would? And then followed by some horrible shit the government's done.
Yeah.
Like Ruby Ridge or stealing people's kids from them and shit like that. Or allowing there to be a fucking invasion across our border while we fund other people's wars or whatever. I don't know. Something's going on.
Not good.
No, it's not great. We gotta do another show here in a minute. So we gotta get out of here. But share with people about Veteran with a Sign and what you're trying to accomplish there and where to find you and everything.
Yeah, so Veteran with a Sign is I'm just trying to break veteran military culture in the best way. I'm trying to like make it a place where it's nostalgic, fun, people can share resources. Different organizations or companies that help. And, I kind of reached like a limit of bandwidth in like what I felt I was able to accomplish just on Instagram. So I started a podcast called the After Action Podcast, which is available YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. And, that's just where I'm like leaned into like larger conversations like you are in a different way. And, I've had many different guests from Christian Craighead to, one of the officers who stopped the school shooting in Nashville to, Tyler Vargas Andrews, which I'm sure we'll probably talk about in Drinking Bros with the new stuff that came out about him. That's not true. And different things like that. So, I'm really just excited to be here, and I can't thank you enough. I hope I've done well.
Have I done well? Yeah, great show.
Great show. Joel?
Pretty decent.
Yeah, no one gives a fuck what you think. Shut up.
Yes.
Goddamn peasant. now, Joel is always my... he's like...
Your attaché.
He's my thermometer for comedy. If he breaks, I can tell something funny is happening, because my brain is just like...
Your brain's scary.
It's just moving forward all the time.
Yeah, I get it. You're way too smart. It's kind of bothering me a little bit, but it's all right.
I just read books.
Smarts and quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, smart. You read books. Okay. Yeah. Way to show off. I listen to Jack Carr audiobooks. All right.
I listen to his audiobooks as well.
Yeah. It's actually really funny hearing the guy do accents.
Yeah. It is. He's got there's a new one. I think he's doing the edits for it right now. So it'll be out. What month is this?
I don't
April.
Know.
Probably when does he release his books? Is he a fall guy?
It's always in summer, I feel.
Maybe it is summer.
Right? Late summer?
I know Nowhere Man releases in February every year. I think Jack is in September. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, with the way the globe's heating up, that's still summer. So.
Well, here in Texas, it fucking sucks. I don't know if the globe is heating up, but Texas sure is. Anyways, thanks for coming today. Great conversation. We're going to go. I got to do a baseball show now for like half an hour, and then we're going to do Drink It Bros, and it's going to get way weirder than this.
Deal.
So I hope you're – chug that energy drink because you're going to need it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.